This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Folks, it is time to talk about one of my absolute favorite topics, snacks. Japanese snacks, specifically. You know, ever since I was a young lad who discovered the world of Japanese snacks, I've been obsessed with their adorable packaging, quirky vibes, and the incredible flavors that you just cannot find in U.S. supermarkets. That is why teaming up with our sponsor, Boxu, a Japanese snack subscription box, has been an absolute blast. Because these snacks aren't just your average grocery store finds. Every month, Boxu delivers over 20 unique treats straight from Japan. Plus, they include a handy guide filled with info about each snack and Japanese culture. Snacking and learning, literally my two favorite things, and I'm going to take a wild guess that those are two things you enjoy as well. Oh, and did I mention that each box ships free from Japan straight to your doorstep? It's incredible. And these snacks are so special, okay? One of them that I just cannot get out of my mind, they have this white chocolate strawberry. It's like a freeze-dried strawberry that is somehow injected with white chocolate. So it is both simultaneously strawberry and white chocolate. I cannot even describe to you what this tasted like. I have never had a textural or taste sensation like it. You gotta try it. And my favorite thing about Boxu, besides the amazing snacks, is that they support small, family-run businesses in Japan. Boxu has sourced your treats by working with over 245 small makers in Japan, helping out their businesses and helping to preserve their traditions. So if you love Japanese snacks as much as I do, or if you know someone who does, you have got to try out Boxu. Right now, you can use the code FACTUALLY for $15 off your first order on Boxu.com. That's FACTUALLY for $15 off your first order on Boxu.com. And let me know what you think of that strawberry. It is seriously good.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to Factually. I'm Adam Conover. Thank you so much for joining me once again as I talk to some incredible people about all the amazing things they know that I don't know and that you might not know. Now, Labor Day has come and gone, and that means that hot labor summer is technically over. But you know what? We're going to have to come up with a new seasonal catchphrase because the fight for labor rights is still heating up in America. In just the past month, UPS Teamsters secured a giant new contract by threatening to go on strike. American Airlines pilots got a massive 21% raise, American Airlines flight attendants won a gigantic strike authorization vote, and we're seeing video game actors and auto workers authorize strikes, along with healthcare workers in Oregon and Colorado. And don't forget, writers and actors are still on strike in Hollywood. We're seeing all of this activity across widely different industries because workers' struggles are the same for everyone, no matter what job you do, even at jobs that have not traditionally gotten the respect they deserve. For instance, strippers. Recently, the strippers at the Star Garden, a topless bar in North Hollywood here in Los Angeles, became the first strip club workers to unionize in decades. And what did they want? Well, the same as workers anywhere. Safety, fairness, security, dignity, and the right to not be fired for bringing up their concerns. Dancers at this club had to deal with threatening patrons without the help of security, and when some of them complained, they were unjustly fired. So, after a year of striking, picketing, and legal sparring that went all the way up to the federal level, strip club management finally withdrew their challenges last spring and recognized the union. The strippers won. And this story is so cool and so important to the entire labor movement because it shows that every worker, and that means every worker, deserves and can win the protection of a union. And that is why I am so grateful to have two of these brave workers on the show today. But before I get into it, I just want to remind you that if you want to support this show, you can toss cost me a couple bucks on Patreon. Just $5 a month gives you every episode of this show ad-free. We have a community Discord, bunch of other community perks. We'd love to have you there. Head to patreon.com/AdamConover to sign up. And just to remind you, I am a touring stand-up comedian. If you want to see me do stand-up comedy in a city near you, head to adamconover.net for tickets and tour dates. And now, without further ado, let's welcome today's incredible guests. They work at the Star Garden in North Hollywood, and they're members of Equity Strippers NoHo, and also serve on the bargaining committee for that union. Please welcome Lilith and Charlie. Lilith and Charlie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
So I had such an incredible experience a couple weeks ago because I went to the grand reopening of the club where you two work. Yes. I'm not a normal strip club visitor. However, sure. When union members say, as an act of solidarity, please come out to the strip club tonight, I show up. There were like 100 other union members there cheering for you guys. You guys were dancing to "You Can't Scare Me, I'm Stripping for the Union."
Yes.
It was so inspiring and so much fun. And you guys are now the first unionized strippers in America. And by the way, is stripper the correct term? I want to make sure.
Yes.
We prefer stripper.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what it's on the literal button you're wearing. Equity strippers.
Yes. You
guys are the first union strippers in America. That is so incredible. I think a lot of people when they think of union jobs, they don't think of stripper first. Right. Why do strippers deserve and need a union?
Well, there are a lot of workplace conditions that often bosses who have money at the forefront of their mind will dismiss. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's like a widespread issue in the industry and was the main thing that we decided to organize around was safety issues.
And what kind of safety issues are you talking about?
One of the policies that our management set was that if we had an issue with a customer and like if the customer was being too rough or was misbehaving in any way, that we were not allowed to confront them ourselves and we were not allowed to go straight to security to intervene on our behalf, that we had to first go to management, even if they were off site, which meant we would have to call them up.
What?
They would have to look at the footage and decide whether or not that was a severe enough instance for security.
And in the meantime, the person is still, I don't know, menacing you with a bat or whatever it is they're 100%.
Doing. Yeah. Going to other dancers, yep. Doing what they like did to us. Yeah.
And it was not like looking at the footage in the moment. It was like, we'll review tonight or never, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah. And also I think with stripping your condition, like it's you looking out for you. That's kind of just how it goes. So I think strippers need a union because there's never ever been someone looking out for you when you're in like situations such as these. And also we are the second unionized. The first was the Lusty Ladies.
I wear a shirt.
Wait, really?
In the 90s. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So we're the only current.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Respect to the Lusty Ladies.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry for getting it wrong.
No worries.
But you said as a stripper, you're looking out for yourself, except you guys are not looking out for yourselves. You're looking out for each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I assume maybe you mean that's a little bit unusual in this world. Tell me the story. How did you... how did you meet each other and, you know, when on the job, how did you like develop that union consciousness? What was the, how did it happen?
Well, there was three major strikes that led us to the real strike. The third was already described by Lilith, but the first was there is a collection of unfair firings. So one of us was feeling threatened by a customer and approached security and security made a horrible response about it. And just kind of threw it on the stripper for like putting herself in a situation, whatever. And then
they blamed her for it.
100%.
Yeah. That's awful.
And then they fired her for bringing up the issue.
Wow.
Which was absolutely insane. And then the second firing was I was on stage dancing and then a customer was recording, which is obviously not allowed.
Yeah.
And another stripper had to intervene because obviously security wasn't. And she walked over and she told him like, hey, you can't record in here. He was drunk, made a scene, and then she got fired for starting drama. So those were the first two strikes. It was really scary. And all of us were like, whoa. And I think that's when like the union consciousness started building of us like, oh, if we need to protect ourselves, it's only through each other. And then the third thing was when we were told we couldn't go to security anymore, mm-hmm. as if they were there before.
So you mean these are the three strikes in that these are the bad things management did that develop your consciousness.
Yes.
Right.
But this eventually led to you actually going on strike.
Yeah. Correct. And also I think like my first day at Star Garden, I was approached by one of our lovely dancers, Wicked.
Yes.
And she told me right off the bat, management does not have your back. Security does not have your back. If something happens to you, you come to me. and I will help you deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I there already was this culture of like looking out for each other.
For sure. Yeah. And with stripping, a lot of people assume that it's like girls are always against each other. Like you're not friends in the club. It's like cutthroat. And I think that's real in some situations. But for my experience dancing for the past few years, it's always been like nothing but a community where you are like looking out for each other, vetting people together. And it really is like what you were saying with Wicked. It's just, you know, like we have to look out for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me more, a little bit more about like what it's like to do the job, because it's a job that is not taken seriously or given a lot of respect by right. a lot of people, but it's also, I believe every job should be possible to do with dignity. And I assume that there must be things you enjoy about the job, right?
Yeah.
Like you must take pride in your work.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. When I explain stripping, I explain it first and foremost as a sales job, which there are strippers who create courses on sales, and like people will like take courses on sales because you are selling lap dances as like that is your main source of income or private rooms. And obviously there's a big performance component of it on stage, but most I would say like 90% of the job you're just talking to people and getting to know people and trying to get some kind of tips or compensation or make some sales. Yeah.
I think the job is really special in like an anthropological way because you get to see a very honest and vulnerable version of someone, which is like not something you see all the time at any regular bar. And it, besides from being sales, it's just like, I've learned how to talk to people in a brand new way in like a very, like I feel better in every other job interview I've ever had because being a stripper has like prepped me how to hold a conversation and like, you know, just my communication skills are like way further than I ever would have expected because of this job. And also you just learn so much about people. And then there's this also like really fun performance aspect and you meet a lot of artists just like between dancers and also customers. Like it's a really creative and vulnerable space, and putting those two things together can be really magical. And, you know, if the system is right, it doesn't have to be unsafe. You know, it could just be magic.
And by the way, I mean, just based on the one night I went, like, you guys are incredible. You're incredibly talented and very good at. And it's like the same pleasure you can take of watching anybody be great at something is really enjoyable. But yeah, you just said that like when it's run well, it can be not a bad thing. I think people think strip club, they think CD. A lot of people think that they shouldn't even really exist, you know, or why, like if you're a customer, there's something wrong with you. So, and I know a lot of that is because of how puritanical we are in this country and how badly we treat both those workers and those customers and those businesses. And so it sort of drives them into a CD place. Mm-hmm. But what is, like, just tell me more about the positive aspect. Like, do you have positive interactions with the customers? Do you think they get something positive out of it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One thing, it's funny, my mother, when she heard I was a stripper, her fear was that it would, like, make me hate men. And it's actually done, like, quite the opposite. Mm. Like, I feel, a greater compassion for men because a lot of the men that go to strip clubs are not getting therapy because they're discouraged to in society. And you see like a really like beautiful, vulnerable side to people and have really like deep existential conversations with people. So there is that really like big human component and also like intimacy and like touch and things that are not, a lot of people don't have access to. So it's great to be able to like provide that for people and to make people feel desirable who might not out in the real world.
For sure. Yeah. And when people think about strip clubs, I think they only can imagine that intimacy exists in a physical way, but it's like so emotional. Like I feel so close to my customers just when we talk for like 2 hours about like their life stories and mine as well. And it feels, it's touching and like also like emotional and sad. And that is like a therapy experience that is shared, I think. And like coaching people through anything that is challenging, it's like the environment to be in for a lot of people that don't have another outlet, like what you were saying, because just the way like society shames therapy for like masculinity. And this is like a place to get access to having someone that like has no business listening to you in their underwear, listen to you, you know, I think it's a really healing thing.
This is really heartwarming the way you put it. I mean, these are folks who have a human need for intimacy, for touch, for conversation, for like a little sexual stimulation as well, right? Mm-hmm. Just to maybe they don't have access to that in their lives, and they're paying for it. Sure, you're being paid for a service, but you care about it.
Yeah.
You care about the service. You feel like you're doing a good thing for the folks, and it can be a positive exchange.
Absolutely,
I'd say more times than not, it really is.
Yeah.
But in order for that positive interchange to happen, it has to be like a safe place that is not exploiting the customers or you guys.
Right.
So what are the other challenges like to that positive exchange that you experience on the job?
Quotas, I think, can be something that inhibits like a positive culture in the club. And this is something that Star Garden had enforced before we got to striking.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed to sell, I think it was $200 of lap dances a night. And if you didn't, you would lose your job. And like, sometimes there's not enough people in the club to sell $200, or you're not feeling well, you just really don't want to. And like, everyone is well within their right to not, you know, do a service that they're not ready to do. And it creates like a desperate and dangerous culture of being like, please, I really need this or else I'll lose my job.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And also like there are known like tables of men at Star Garden because they wouldn't blacklist people who you knew them to be like predators who would take advantage of you.
Yeah.
And
so that's someone who you can't do a lap dance with safely.
Exactly.
But you have a quota. So you're like, exactly. I got to go to somebody.
Yes.
Oh, that's awful position to be in.
And this is not unheard of. This is actually incredibly common throughout most clubs in California, at least. It costs a lot of money to be there. And you can lose your job for not like reaching whatever quota or house fee they have set.
What do you mean it costs a lot of money to be there? Like for the customer or for you?
For us. So almost every club has a house fee. And it can be anywhere between $40 and $200 just to work for the day or the night.
Wait, you pay to work for
every
the day?
Every time.
And in most clubs, you are not paid hourly. Right. California is kind of different in that there was a law that was passed that held management to basically told them that strippers are classified as employees. You do need to pay them an hourly wage, which they retaliated against in many different ways.
But this is a law.
In California. But in most parts of the world and in some clubs still that aren't complying with that law, they are not paying hourly. And they are, in fact, having you pay to work there.
Or they'll treat you like an employee and maybe you will get an hourly, but you're expected to still pay them back with the house fee. So if you're making $50 with your hourly minimum wage, you're expected to pay maybe $200 to be there.
Wow.
And then they also will take a percentage of all of the dances that you sell. And it's different at every club because there's never been anyone before this to enforce any rules or laws. And yeah, it was a really challenging law that was passed because.
And so, before the strike and before your union, how were you paid? You were paid for the dances, and I assume for people throwing cash on the stage. That's your income. But were you paid anything by the club at all?
No.
Yeah. So Star Garden, they took 50% of our lap dances.
Wow.
And Star Garden didn't have a house fee,
right?
And we were allowed to keep all of our tips.
Okay.
So no house fee, just the quota.
Got it. Okay. But still, they're taking a lot of money. They're also selling drinks and all of that. And I'm sure making plenty of money. But you guys are having a lot of trouble making a living. So tell me a little bit about, what like that moment when you decided to we could form a union. Like, I have to think a lot of strippers might not be their first thought. How about a union?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did that idea come to you guys?
Yeah. So the three strikes that Charlie described, once basically management came into the dressing room and made it very explicit what was and was not allowed on our parts when we were in an unsafe situation, we felt that things were really grave and dire and that any of our jobs could be on the hook at any moment. So we fast-tracked a safety petition to deliver to the bosses because we knew that under the NLRA, we would be protected and that we had a meeting about the petition, and a week later, we delivered it to the bosses. And
with your names on it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With like, we had, I think, like 19 signatures, and there were 24 dancers.
Wow.
And so we delivered it to the bosses. They told us, okay, if you don't feel safe, you can not work tonight. And so we counted that as a victory, and they told us we'd be able to discuss the petition our next shift, which was on a Saturday, and we all came into work as usual, and there was a security guard posted up front with a little red velvet rope saying, if you're not on the list, you're not allowed to come in and work. And the only way to get on the list is to talk to the owner, Jenny. And we all tried to call Jenny, and she did not answer our calls. And they ghosted us from that day until we settled.
Tried to shut you out and prevent you from working because of the petition?
It was a lockout for anyone who had signed that petition.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's how we lost our jobs.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at this point, were you working with anyone from a union or did, like an organizer or lawyer of any kind?
We were working with a nonprofit organization called Strippers United.
Okay.
And so we were working with an organizer there who goes by Stony, and a pro bono lawyer named Jordan Palmer. Mm. And both of them taught us everything we know.
Yeah.
We also had some dancers who were very into labor rights and who had been dreaming of a union strip club forever.
Right.
Hell yeah.
But they were, for like the first 3-4 months, it was just the group of strippers, Jordan and Stony. Like, it was us against the world. And our lawyer was pulling the most incredible, like, strategic feats of lawyering all by herself while working. Wow. She's a lawyer at Unite here. So she was pulling, like,
80-hour work weeks to include our movement with her regular 40-hour work week.
But anyone from Unite here, I mean, for folks who don't know, Unite here represents hospitality workers, like really low-wage folks, and they are such an incredible union that has so much power. Whenever I meet someone in labor from Unite here, I'm like, oh, this person's a badass for sure.
Yeah, they're the real deal.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with the whole thing of us like all looking out for each other and ourselves is that you have to know your rights, which is why a few of us were already like into organizing and understanding like how like our human rights and our work rights, what they mean for us.
Right.
So it wasn't like we had never thought of this before because it's not, there's no HR, you know, you have to like look out for yourself. So people had taken this interest already. And I think the final thing that just led us to the next phase was there's always the conversation of like, if you don't like it here, just go to another club.
Right.
But it's pretty standard at almost every club that you're going to be in some situation that is like unfavorable.
Because you were like, well, if we go to another club, the same thing is going to happen.
Yeah.
So we might as well try to improve the place that we currently work, because it's not like there's some of the great club out there to go to.
Right. Exactly. And also, like, we really did have a community at Star Garden of customers and of dancers that we wanted to preserve and make better. And Star Garden's been there for like 40 years. It's a staple of the neighborhood. Like, it felt worth fighting for us.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit more about that community. Like, there were customers who you enjoyed seeing. There's folks who you have a positive relationship with. Like, there were good things about the workplace that you wanted to preserve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also, like, Star Garden's like a cute dive bar where we were allowed to dance to whatever we wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, it had like fun, kitschy vibes. Yeah. And like really loyal, lovely customers who, once we went on strike, joined us on the picket lines and were there every single weekend.
For 8 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you had customers at the picket line. They were like, well, I'm used to going to the strip club, but now I'll go stand outside the strip club.
Yeah. Because they're like, hey, we go to Star Garden for these strippers. We don't go in for your overpriced beer.
A huge part of our strategy was proving that we are the club, and like there is no club without the strippers.
Yeah.
So being outside with our customers was like, not only like perfect for us to like, you know, be like, wow, these people are like our community, but also I think it helped prove to Star Garden that like these people are only here because of us, not because of the building that we're in.
Yeah.
So, and it was amazing. We ended up on our last picket before we were able to stop. We had like a graduation night and we did like superlatives for all of like our supporters that would come out every week with like hot chocolate and pizza. And it was really, this community has gotten us exactly where we are today.
That's so cool. Well, so tell me about the moment that you went on strike. They were locking you out. They said you could only work if you didn't sign the petition. And so were they trying to bring it, like, did you go on strike at that moment, or were they trying to bring in people to replace you?
So there were probably about four dancers who were working at the club before the strike who continued working at the club.
Uh-huh.
And just because our community doesn't respond well to like words like scab. So we've been calling them strike breaking workers.
Sure.
And so there were four, and then they continued to try to hire people while we were out on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So they were still functioning with you know, a fraction of the dancers they had before.
And a fraction of the customers.
Yeah, we were driving out probably 90% of the customers who were trying to go inside.
Yes. Yeah. We had this cute little whiteboard every single night that we picketed, and it was always like a fun little cartoon on it, but it was like customers that love us and customers that don't. And that was pretty much, and it was like a different version of that depending on whatever theme we had that week.
Yeah. And we were really, really good at driving customers away because it was kind of like the opposite of what we're paid to do in the club, which is you're paid to tell customers you should come in and buy lap dances.
Yeah.
And now we're using the exact same skill set to be like, you should not come in, you should stay with us.
You're
spend money.
Hey, big boy, don't cross the picket line.
Exactly. Yeah. So people would like roll up in their cars and they put their windows down because we had a huge line of people outside with like posters, whatever. And we would like strut on over into their like little windows with our like tiny little like bikini costume outfit on. And we'd be like, hey, so this is like the only club in the country that's striking. It would really mean a lot to me if you just went to another one.
Yeah.
And we did that all the full 8 months. And that's just how it went.
God, that would give out that our numbers. So like, good on me.
Yes. Yeah. I'll let you know when I can dance again. And just do that.
Like, oh, honey, yeah, of course, whatever you want. Yeah. You tell me where to go.
Yeah. We just like swerve away really fast. And we like mark the board. Yeah. It was a party. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So, and that is a really effective picket line because you're turning people away. And you've got a federal right to do it.
Yeah. It's funny too, because we had a lot of like themed nights on the picket line.
Yeah.
And I think we realized really quickly that there were certain themes that did not get strip club customers to stop.
Yeah.
I can't, like we did like a daddy issues theme where we all dressed like dads.
Yeah. Like, and, like we had a grill.
Like that. Was not like you. I think you need a little something sexy showing.
Like the Braveheart night didn't turn people away.
Yeah,
that's not like what daddy culture is about.
No,
is dressing like an actual dad.
No,
you're like, this isn't what I wanted.
Right.
Yeah, not at all. But also the themes were a really important part of our strike that kept people coming out. Because one, everyone in LA loves an outfit. They love a reason to get dressed up. So it was a smart strategic move for us. And also it kept our momentum going because like there were so many weeks where we were like, I can't keep doing this. Like, I want a job. I want to work and make money. And then we were like, ooh, but we're going to have like a club kids theme. So like, I don't want to miss that.
Yeah.
And like, it really kept us going.
Yeah. One of our favorite themes was we ended up submitting complaints to OSHA.
Oh,
and
my God.
Wow.
We all, we had like a whole delegation show up to the office and like drop it off. And then we ended up like a week later on the picket line dressing up as our various OSHA violations.
Yeah.
So we had someone who was like dressed up as like the hole in the stage.
Yeah. Or like broken glass on the floor.
Yeah.
I think we went as roaches or something.
Yeah, I went as a bed bug.
Yeah, bed bug there was. Yeah.
Well, so you guys are using every trick in the book from a labor law perspective. Like you're not just picketing and striking.
Yeah.
You are I assume you're like filing unfair labor practices and going to the federal government and doing all those sorts of things. At this point, are you working with Actors Equity? That's the union that you ended up joining, right?
I think we were on our own, I think, until like summer. So it was a few months on our own, and then we made the connection with Equity. And like from the get-go, from our first meeting with them, we were like, oh, they get it.
Yeah.
And
We share a lot of really similar stage conditions, at least, to what Actors Equity contracts already have for like no filming on stage and like understanding like audience to performer guidelines.
Yeah.
So that was just like one step in the right direction already.
Yeah.
I was going to ask because Equity, I am not super familiar with the union, but I know actors in New York. I know it's the Broadway union, et cetera. Right.
Yeah.
I would have wondered, oh, is there a little bit of a cultural thing for them to learn? But they were right on board with it immediately.
Yeah, and I think that what was so important to us is they understood the ways that we were like them and like the performers they already cover. And then they also were very cognizant of the ways that we are unlike the performers they cover. And they approached us with a willingness to learn. And like they wanted to know, what is the proper vocabulary to use?
Yeah.
Like, do you like to be called strippers? And have encouraged their member base to like get on board with that. It's been so lovely. And it's been the loveliest to see them like spearhead the bargaining.
Oh my God.
It's beautiful. We love that.
Well, let's get to that because you guys won this strike and I want to learn exactly how you did it, but we got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with more Charlie and Lilith from NoHo Strippers Union.
Folks, I'm honored to say that the podcast is sponsored this week by The Washington Post. If you're a Factually listener, you're already a person who aims to stay informed, aware, and engaged. But let me bring you in on a little secret. Beside the fantastic guests I have on this show, the number one way that I stay engaged is through reading the news like The Washington Post. Their journalists bring you the facts and provide clarity about what's happening on Capitol Hill, the economy, climate change, foreign policy, and everything else that I and you care about. You know, here on Factually, we love to go deep on topics, and The Washington Post helps me and helps you go deeper on the news that matters most to you. That's why I start my days by warming up my brain by reading great articles from some of the best journalists out there in the Post. In fact, many of my favorite past guests on this show, like Taylor Lorenz and David Weigel, have contributed to The Washington Post. That's how good their journalists are. You know, I've also found that adding The Washington Post app to the home screen on my phone has been a great way to cut my social media time. Instead of scrolling through social media on the bus, I get to learn more about the world around me. It is absolutely incredible and makes that commute time so much more enjoyable and fruitful. I also love the Post's newsletters, like The 7, which is a quick commute read that they send each weekday morning and is also available as a podcast. I even signed up to get the Post's For You newsletter, which sends me my very own personalized roundup of stories every evening based on my interests in reading history. So if all of that sounds good to you, well, now is the time to sign up for The Washington Post. Go to WashingtonPost.com/factually to subscribe for just 50 cents a week for your first year. That is 80% off their typical offer. So this is truly a steal. Once again, that is WashingtonPost.com/factually to subscribe for just 50 cents a week for your first year. Folks, I am so thrilled to tell you about today's sponsor, Delete Me, because it is a service that I wholeheartedly stand behind and have used myself for years. As a Factually listener, you're well aware of my dedication to online privacy, and no tool has been more useful to me in protecting my privacy and the privacy of the people I care about than Delete Me. Here's the tough truth. Our data is out there. Our phone numbers, addresses, and the names of our family members are in the nooks and crannies of the internet. These are sites called data brokers, and they make money by taking all of your publicly available data and putting it on the internet where anyone with a credit card can buy it. These are real sites. This is not the dark web. There are hundreds of them across the internet. Now, here's the deal. Every single one of these sites has an opt-out. You could go opt out of every single one of them if you wanted, if you knew the names of all these hundreds of sites, and if you had an infinite amount of time. But you don't, right? Well, guess what? Delete Me has that time because they do it for you. Their teams of experts take on this overwhelming task and shoulder it for you. They work tirelessly to hunt down every single site that has your data and eliminate it from that site. Within just 7 days, you'll receive a comprehensive report of everywhere they found your data and everywhere that they are removing it. And a lot of people need this service. A staggering 41% of Americans are vulnerable to online harassment, from doxing to scams to even identity theft. So don't let yourself fall prey to these dangers. Don't give the bad guys a leg up by keeping your data out on the internet where they can get it. Instead, protect yourself with Delete Me. And I repeat, I cannot recommend this service enough. It really works. And that is why I signed up my entire family for it, to keep them safe. And get this, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/Adam and use promo code Adam at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/Adam, code Adam.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. You know, I never used to have allergies, but then suddenly in my 30s, I started getting walloped with them every single spring. I'll step outside on a beautiful day, ready to hop on the bus or head down to the podcast studio, and suddenly I have a runny nose, scratchy eyes, and it makes it pretty hard to have a conversation with our guests when I am so bogged down and distracted with allergies. Well, luckily for those of us who live with those symptoms, which now includes me, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So when I've got a big interview with a big guest, I look for relief with Claritin D. In as little as 30 minutes, I'm refreshed, I'm renewed, and I no longer sound like some kind of cartoon duck. So if you are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it is time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. You can find Claritin D at your pharmacy counter, and you don't even need a prescription. So go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. That's Claritin.com. Use as directed.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, we're back with Charlie and Lilith from Equity Strippers NoHo. So you guys were on strike for how long, and what was the moment in which you won?
We were on strike, I think, for a total of 15 months.
15 months?
Yes. Yes.
That is so long.
It's so long.
Going without work. Yeah. That is very difficult. How was that for you?
We picketed for only 8 months.
Yes.
But the strike continued without work for 15.
Mm-hmm. And we luckily, we had a strike fund from that our community would donate to.
Incredible.
So that was really helpful.
Wow.
In staying afloat.
Instead of tossing dollar bills onto the stage,
exactly.
They're like tossing them into a GoFundMe.
It's less appealing. Exactly. However, yes. There were luckily so many kind souls who did it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, look, I just love giving you girls money.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly.
And we love them for that.
Well, so what happened to the club during this time?
So they actually ended up filing for bankruptcy.
Wow.
So we had our first union election in November of 2023, where none of our ballots were opened because the club contested all of them, saying we weren't employees, that we were just like leasing their space.
Uh-huh.
And after that point, they filed for bankruptcy as like a union busting tactic. And they were trying to, it was Chapter 11 bankruptcy where basically they just like reassigned their assets and they were trying to convert Star Garden into a pool hall.
Which is hilarious.
Has no dancers as a way to not hire us back.
Yeah.
Which is so, so good.
If there's no jobs for them to return to, guess they can't work here anymore.
Yeah. And obviously the NLRB saw right through that.
Yeah.
And we ended up being a part of forcing them into Chapter 9 bankruptcy, which is like full liquidation. And
wow.
We had an NLRB hearing coming up, which would deal with the ULPs we filed and also would deal with our employee status and whether or not our ballots in our union election should be allowed to be opened. And like the weekend before that hearing was happening, the club was like, we don't want to do that hearing. Like, so we had settlement meetings with them and we ended up settling.
They folded. They said, we give in, you guys win. We will settle over those issues. And they ended up being forced to recognize the union.
Yep.
Yeah. So eventually, they basically removed their contestations and were like, you can open their ballots. And then they said, we will put money into reopening the club as long as we can get out of bankruptcy and we will hire back everyone that was locked out.
And that's the process that you were there for.
Yeah. Well, that was the first night that you guys were open, but it didn't seem like everything was hunky-dory at this club because there was a $40 cover charge to get in, whereas you guys told me that it was previously free to get in.
Yes.
And this was the craziest part. There was no ATM in the club, and they wouldn't make change at the bar.
Right.
So there are all these people with 20s going, I want to do the thing. I want to throw the money. I'm at the strip club, but I can't. I threw a 20 or two because I ran out of singles. So it seems like they're not very happy about being back in business with y'all.
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
So what's going on?
So basically in early parts of bargaining has been negotiating the terms of reopening.
Right.
And we just did not have a lot of movement with them, like just specifically in that area.
Yeah.
And so we kind of just had to allow them to have their managerial rights and to run the club as they see fit until we're able to lock down a true union contract.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at the mercy a little bit for the time being of these tactics they're using. But we've been working in the club since it's been open and there have been no customers. And it's been really funny to see customers who know nothing about us and what's happening to walk in and be like, what in God's name is this strip club?
Right. Like, so we're doing the best we can and having like the best energy and having fun is actually the words that I'm looking for, because the only thing that I think has gotten through to them is that we are still the club, and we will still continuously have a good time no matter what they do. So I think we showed them with reopening of how many people came out for us. And even though there was a $40 cover, and so we're making light as we can of all of the new rules that are continuously being placed. And this is like every shift, there's at least some new rule that is now being imposed on us. So we're having fun. We're doing a lot of bits.
Since you were in there, some rules that have come up are we're not allowed to go past like the black lines on the stage.
At any moment on stage.
Which is like most of the stage.
Okay.
And there's just like no touching of anyone whatsoever.
Anywhere in the club.
And
but what about lap dances? You said that's like the main, you can't do that?
I'm pretty positive if we were to be giving lap dances, which basically at this moment, they've changed the lap dance rules so that the first $200 you make in lap dance, they keep all of that money.
Wow.
Which is worse than it was previously. But I'm pretty sure they would just have us do a little air moment in front of someone.
Yep.
But I don't understand because... Why have a strip club like I if they're vindictive and they're mean and they're trying to punish you for exercising your legal rights under federal labor law and exercising them well, sure. But these are also punishing themselves as a strip club.
Yeah.
100%. So what is the point of this?
I think that spite just weighs a little heavier on their list than like good money sense at the moment. I hope that will change and that we can,
you know, this is reminding me a little bit of a strike that I'm involved there's a lot there, you know, all workers are sort of, you know, engaged in the same struggle, right? But like there is a real commonality here where it's like these there was just a news report that like Warner Brothers has lost like hundreds of millions of dollars because of how long they've dragged out the strike. Whereas the demands would be like $40 million. We all want to go back to work, you know, and it would be cheaper for them to work, but they are mean and angry and incompetent and can't figure out how to make a deal that would benefit them and everybody else. It seems like a similar, we're talking about David Zaslav versus just some, you know, a couple idiots who own a strip club.
Yes.
Vast differences in wealth here, but the same problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like there's a bunch of great one-liners that have carried us through this movement, including this could have been an email. Like, we can end this whenever you want. Yeah. So they're definitely more interested in making sure that we and our customers are feeling like the negative effects of what they're doing more than having a successful club, which is crazy. To put into context what's going on with the lap dances, we would make, if we sold a crazy amount, like $800 of lap dances, we would only be taking home $300.
Wow.
So that's like
how much. And that's a big night is $800.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a crazy new role to put on. And there's just a new role every night. We can't touch ourselves on stage.
That's the one I forgot.
Can't touch yourself?
No, we're having a monitoring. Lot of fun. Yeah, we're just like miming, grabbing our boobs and stuff.
What?
Yeah.
I know.
You're a stripper.
I know.
You can't grab your own boobs.
Yeah,
I thought that was the whole job.
Listen.
Yeah, it is.
We thought so too. But
and I will say, like, the amount of performance art that has emerged from these new rules is truly remarkable. One of
Charm
is an icon. She one of her performances, she wore a dog collar and like chained herself to the pole so that she wouldn't go outside the lines. And I was like,
it was insane. She also did this weekend this incredible mime act where she like couldn't leave the lines and she had like her little hat to get money, but no one could throw far enough to get into the hat because you're so far away from the tip rail. Yeah. And it was iconic. So again, it's the bits. The bits are getting us through.
Always.
And Steve and Jenny, the managers, like their eyes are glued on the TV. Like they will not look at us. And there's some joy. There is some joy
there
in
is
that.
Some.
But I mean, why even...
Right.
Why, you guys said they were talking about turning into a pool hall or whatever. I'm like, if they want to not run a strip club that badly, why even have it be open? Like, why not concede to you and just make more money?
That's the real question.
Yeah, the age-old question. Yeah.
Yeah. They also, as far as the ATM, like they got rid of it. It was there beforehand, but they got rid of that because they don't want to see us being as successful as them. So I think as long as no one's making money. They're happy, but we're crafty.
This goes to show that a lot of times with bosses, when they resist a union, it's not because of the money. It's because of the power, and it's emotional. It's, I don't want, hold on a second. These people who work for me get to tell me what to do, or they have any power at all. I have to see them as a partner. Right. I have to treat them with respect. No.
That's it.
Yes.
I'm in charge. Yeah. And then they want to keep throwing their weight around. Yeah. It's like this bizarre dominance psychology.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We see that with the management rates, because they keep, that's the one thing that we at this moment can't like, change that's like well within their rights to make up their rules. So on top of new rules all the time to express their like dominancy, they also are coming up with really fun and creative ways to turn away our supporters, which I love. Two of my customers this weekend got turned away because Steve, who was acting as security, said that he didn't like the way that they looked at him. And I think that's hilarious.
Which, like, that's not a protected class.
No.
But, like, it's shitty.
It's shitty. Yeah. So,
that's his full prerogative, but it sucks.
It sucks. Yeah. It's just, again, that whole, like, I'm the boss and I need to do whatever I can to maintain boss mentality, to exercise power and exploit my workers.
Yeah.
But, no. Nope.
Well, so you guys won, in the process of forming a union, there's like two big victories you need to win. And you won the first one, which is forming the union and getting recognized under labor law. So now they have to bargain with you.
Yes.
But that can sometimes be, even though it took you 15 months, it can sometimes be the easier battle compared to the second victory you need to win, which is winning the contract.
Yes.
Which is where you get all the better wages or working conditions or safety, whatever. Actually, that's not true, because sometimes just fighting will cause the company, you know, in many cases to make improvements. If they show that you're fighting, they'll try to sweeten the deal so that you're less angry. But in your case, you really do need to win this contract.
Yeah.
So you're in that part of it now. Tell me about that, and how are you battling to win that contract from them?
It's grueling, first of all. It's hard.
Yeah. I think we're hoping it will be helpful that we've shown them already what a strike would be like for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that it would not have to come to that a second time.
You could go on strike again if you had to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But obviously you don't want to.
Yes. Yeah. It would be so ideal to just come to some kind of agreement that we're all happy with.
Yep.
But yeah, we've been in bargaining now for like three months or so. And it's something.
It is definitely hard.
I will say it's been really empowering to be able to have our voices heard in the way that our workplace is run, and to see our lead negotiator with Actors Equity just completely like give the most like beautiful speeches on our behalf, like just demanding our respect. Right. That's been incredible. But yeah, it's definitely a lot, we have big hurdles ahead of us.
Yeah.
That's
for sure.
Have you been in the room like for the negotiations?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, we're both on the bargaining committee.
Yeah, so for every bargaining session, it's all on Zoom. There is one that was in person, which was wild. We get to all watch our lawyers like do this like very passionate and beautifully well-spoken like conversation with their lawyers. And it really... It makes me feel like Actors Equity is here for us in a way that I didn't see until I started seeing this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's huge. And also just like getting to tell them like, this is how to run a business. And we know it because obviously the employees will always know the better way to run the business.
Yeah.
So getting those things out, even if they're not being heard, it feels good to be able to like express it to them.
Yeah.
For example, like a cover charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About the cover charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I hear that so much in other, you know, service industry unionization jobs that are happening, like Starbucks workers, for instance, when they're unionizing. It's often about like, hey, we know how to run the shop because we're here every day.
Yeah.
Like, you should run it this way. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just trying to make it run better.
Right.
And like that sort of like using that knowledge that the workers have to try to benefit everybody, customers, management, and employees included.
Yes. Yeah. And this goes back to what I was saying before about the quotas and how it creates this like really dangerous and uncomfortable environment. It's like, we know what it feels like to be in that, and they only know what it feels like to profit off of that. So like working, proposing to them what it could be like if we all were in an equitable system that like, well, where we felt safe and protected and, you know, we can move forward and make them rich and while we also are making money mm-hmm. would be like our dream.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're working together for a future where hopefully we can, it can be equitable for all of us.
But so. It but you're just dealing with just a couple assholes, right? Who are, I'm not sure. Those are my words.
Sure.
I know you're bargaining with these folks. Maybe you don't want to call them names, but you know, you are sort of relying on a couple of people who just randomly own a strip club into like being smart business people.
Yeah, right. Like reasonable humans.
Yeah. Reasonable is actually the much better word. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are expecting a lot.
And like so many strip club owners don't understand like the power in incentivizing mm-hmm. versus penalizing.
Yeah.
Right. Like if there was a lap dance like percentage set up where like you would receive more money the more lap dances you give and the more money you make the club, then they would see how much more effective that is immediately.
Right. Rather than you can lose your job from not selling enough.
Yeah. I imagine there must be somewhere in America like well-run strip clubs that are like done in sort of a positive way that, like
I'm
you described.
Sure
we
imagine that too.
You imagine that? Okay.
I'm sure there is.
I've danced in a few different cities in a few different states. And, you know, I think every single club could use a lot of work.
Of course.
Some of them do have incentive programs where like if you work 3 days in a row, maybe your fourth day, they'll give you half off on your house fee. But like, it takes a lot for a club to get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things, though, talking about these owners that I find really inspiring about what you're doing is you are bringing the full weight of labor law. Like you have good union lawyers who are, that's an unfair labor practice. You can't do that. We're taking you to OSHA. We're taking you to the NLRB, which adjudicates labor decisions. And these are just, again, a couple people who own a local strip club. Like you're not up against, you know, Amazon or Starbucks or these big companies that bring in the big inter-union law firm.
Right.
These are like, you know, some local business owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but you are fighting for your rights in exactly the same way and like taking it to them. They must be a little bit stunned because, I mean, I would imagine they would not have expected to be talking to a lawyer from Actors Equity or to be talking to unionized members of
the
workforce.
I think they still think that they can just wait us out.
Yeah.
That's where they're at.
Yeah. And I think that like their perception of strippers is like a big part of that. I think that they completely underestimated us. And
like, I mean, what do they think of strippers? Like,
I think that they just like didn't expect us to be resourceful or like have like good thoughts just generally.
Definitely.
But I think Actors Equity probably stunned them. And then the NLRB was very involved in our case and was very
amazing.
Incredible. And
we still are.
And so I don't think that they expected it to get to a federal level.
Well, I think a lot of it, again, is the cultural perception of strippers and of the job that you do. People think it's not a job that any decent person or intelligent person or powerful person. This is just a degraded job for people who aren't worth anything. And so they don't expect those folks to stand up and have power and be smart and committed and strategic.
I think what they don't realize is that I would say a good majority of all strippers have other jobs, but they're in fields that just don't pay well. Like when you're an assistant or you're doing anything creative, like music, fashion, art, whatever, all of those things are not like high paying jobs when you're starting off. So it's always, for a lot of people, it's just supplemental income, which means a lot of people have a lot of work experience coming into clubs that they just wouldn't, that club owners don't expect you to have.
Right.
So they think that you don't understand what it means to have like a labor, to have employee rights.
Right.
But like most people have had at least a few experiences where they've been told like what their rights are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of their perception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the early days, because this thing we skipped that I want to make sure we talked about. One of the most important early steps in unionizing is talking to your coworkers, getting everybody on board, finding out what everybody needs, doing that basic organizing. And just tell me about that step when you were first getting started. Like, how did that go and how did you approach it?
I think the first time we discussed organizing was with the first firing of this dancer, Reagan, because she was just such a, like, emblematic part of Star Garden.
Yeah.
She had so many like big customers who brought in a lot of money. So it really felt like, oh, if she is not safe and her job is not safe, then we are not either.
Yep.
And so that's when discussions about like our protections and what we could do and how the law could help us started. And that's it. We very fortunately had a little Instagram group chat that was just to discuss, you know, random work things that very quickly became a union organizing group chat.
Got it. Yeah. So this seems like this is pretty easy. You didn't have to like go and really bend people's ears and go think about it. You were all in a group chat and you were going like, let's fucking get them.
Yeah.
There was only, I think, 24 dancers total. And also the whole, our entire movement, I think the word that could be used is urgency. Like, we had maybe a week from when Reagan had gotten fired to when Selena got fired. And we were like, no one is safe. And then we were like, all right, petition, let's go, 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 go. And then strike. And it was just so quick that there wasn't like this big like, hey, like, have you ever heard of unionization? Like, do you know what you could be protected for? And like, it just didn't happen like that because we didn't have a grace period.
Yeah, I will say that like one of the, in our earliest discussions, one, the documentary Live Nude Girls Unite about the Lusty Lady unionization in the 90s, that was mentioned as just like a touch point to be like, if you're afraid of the prospect of us as strippers unionizing, like, look at this and just maybe get inspired. And I watched that documentary and was absolutely like, oh, I get it now. Like, I see how this could be something like a feasible path for us.
Yeah. Wow. And we were really lucky to have had other strikes across America within strip clubs and also the Lusty Ladies to kind of guide us in everything that we were doing. So we're definitely not the first. And yeah, it feels powerful to know that like the quote unquote sisterhood of like strippers across the world exercising their rights exists. And we got to follow footsteps.
That is so cool. And do you see, you guys have gotten so much press, you got so much support from the labor movement. Are you starting to see that expand? Are there folks considering this another area? Is equity going to try to expand to more strip clubs and cover more workers?
Already has.
Really? There's a club in Portland called Magic Tavern.
I knew Portland would be next.
I know, right?
Obvious. Naturally.
Yes. Yeah, they just like had their vote count and it was mail-in ballots. Yeah. So I think that we should have the results of that soon.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
We all, a few of us like went up to Portland and supported them on their first picket. Like, it's been very beautiful to see because I think like our dream was unionizing our club, but also hoping that there would be other workers who decide that a union is the best thing for their club and that we could have like forged a path for them to make it a little easier. So to see that happen is like,
I think the original goal was once we had unionized and it was successful to be a resource to literally any dancer ever being like, hey, this thing happened at work. What are my protections? And like, what's the next step? So to be able to do that, but then to see it and how quickly Magic Tavern was able to get to their union like election is huge because it took us how many months? Like,
Nine.
Like, we could have had a baby. Yeah, literally.
That's a baby. Yeah. And by the way, I believe Portland is a big strip club town. So if, if one place flips, a whole bunch are going to go next.
Absolutely. Same. That is the hope.
I bet. Yeah. And what you said about having the model is so important, to see that other people have done it. You know, I'm a stand-up comic. There's no stand-up comedy union anywhere in America. But I just last year read a wonderful book called I'm Dying Up Here, which is about the attempt to stand-up comics in the 70s try to unionize the Comedy Store, which is a famous club still there. It, at the time, did not pay. And I knew that comics, they went on strike. I thought they just like, you know, held up picket signs and whatever. They actually did form a real union. They like filed with the NLRB and all of that. They went on strike. You know, Jay Leno was on the picket line. Gary Shandling crossed the picket line. There's all these big Hollywood stories about it. But they were eventually found in the 70s that they could not be a union because they were found to be contractors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just seeing that, oh, hold on a second. Stand-up comics at one point did do this at a particular club made me go, I mean, they could again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'm the one to make it happen or anything.
Sure.
Like, I don't work at a club like that regularly. But just right. like seeing the example can really inspire people to. And I don't know, just seeing you guys do this made me start thinking again about, like, there's a lot of similarities between stand-up comedy right. and stripping, to
For
be
sure.
quite honest.
Yeah.
Maybe we should think about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that a lot of people in other parts of the country do not believe that they as strippers can unionize, because we live in California where there is this law that just demands that we be classified as employees.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, you know, standards from the NLRB that will mean that you should be classified as an employee.
Mm.
And I think that I don't think Magic Tavern is an employee status club,
exactly.
But they are managed like employees and they are scheduled like employees. And there are all these different thresholds that they do meet to be able to unionize.
Yeah, if you're an independent contractor as a comedian, but you're on a strict schedule
yeah.
or club takes fees from you in any way or quotas house fees, whatever, then you are being treated like an employee. Therefore, you're able to unionize.
Got it. Yeah, and it's so often that the boss will tell you, oh, you can't be in the union because you are, you're a contractor or you're a stripper or whatever. That happens a lot in the entertainment industry. People say, oh, PAs can't unionize. Anybody right. with producer in their title can't unionize. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not true.
It's not true.
They just say that in order to make you think, oh, it's, I don't know, there's some law somewhere.
Yeah.
But like, if you actually try to do it and petition, you could be found
yeah.
as you guys were to
Absolutely.
Be like, no, you're eligible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you guys are doing is so inspiring. What other wins have happened in the time that you've been doing this campaign?
So there is a few wins that happened throughout the past 18 months
yeah.
That are really important. The first thing is that everything we complained about to OSHA and all the complaints that we had filed were fixed. So when we came
wow.
back to the club, it was like, wow, our voices and the effort we put in there, there's some outcome. There's a new pole, a new stage. There's air conditioning.
Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't air conditioned before?
Not in our dressing room, which is like closet size. So
yeah.
now there is a vent on the ceiling, which is
oh my God.
Big.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So it is cool. It was one of the first times in this movement after the union election that I was like, wow, when the system works, it really works. So that was like a motivating thing. And then also I think our biggest win is that Selena, she is one of the dancers in our strike and she is undocumented. And through the union, she was able to get her work authorization.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's huge.
Like, so even though you guys haven't won a contract yet, like just by doing this, you have really improved conditions for yourselves and for the people that you work with.
Absolutely. Yeah. yeah. And I think, something that she has been talking about is that a lot of undocumented folks are scared of any sort of government system because they're in constant fear of being deported. But at no point throughout this movement did that fear have to follow her, because she knew that the union would be able to protect her, and it has. Yeah. So it is really, really amazing to show that for strippers and for anyone that feels like the unionization is something that's not available to them, it can be. Yeah, it's conditional, but it exists. And yeah, that's a really huge, huge win for us.
That's amazing. And I mean, just again, talking about the cultural perception of strippers in America and your own opinion about it, have you seen, you know, this process that you've gone through change the way people think about what you do or the way you think about what you do, you know, in terms of that consciousness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think being in the mainstream and having stripping talked about on just like the same level as other workplaces
yeah.
has definitely opened people's minds to it. And I think hopefully has helped with the stigma a little bit.
Yeah. yeah.
I think with equity, having people in equity recognize that we're also performers, like we are all just playing a part, a role. We have our own characters and names. And I think that's a big thing that helped me understand that I'm a performer and I can like claim that. So that's big. And also we do still get a ton of haters and I love them all. They're very funny and silly and they say quippier things than anyone could ever come up with.
Wait, like what? What's the
oh,
best
God.
Quippy hate you've
oh,
ever heard?
There's so much.
I first was very offended by them, and then I saw they all use the same one-liners
yeah.
and I was like,
they're not even original. They're just
copy-pasting.
The same
yeah,
on like your Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, yeah they're yeah. like, this must be the day shift crowd. Or
the
like,
Monday crowd. But what they don't understand is that like stripping is you have to get into the role. So obviously, because they don't see it as a job. So yeah. when we're not like working, we're not going to look like your image of stripper, you
right.
know?
Right.
Like mostly because we're wearing freaking clothing.
Yeah. And like so, daylight is not very forgiving in yeah. the way that club lights are.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just like when actors show up to the picket line and they're like baseball cap and their sunglasses right. and they're like,
exactly.
Like, they don't look like they're in the Marvel movie yeah. that day.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, just like, this is a whole form of work that is so often not just not thought of as work, it's not thought of at all. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there's the, you know, mantra of all forms of sex work are work. And this is, you know, you guys mm-hmm. are demonstrating that in such a mainstream way, right. you know,
yeah.
That is, I think, just going to ripple out and out and out. So look, what I love most about your story is that, you know, this is a story of you guys looking around, unionizing your own workplace. Mm-hmm. If for the folks out there who want to unionize their own workplaces, like, what do you suggest as the first couple steps? You know, like, how do you what do you want people to know about how they can do it too?
I feel like the first step is just to complain.
Yeah. With, like, no, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
complain to each other too.
Exactly. Yeah. Just to like build those relationships with your coworkers and to just plant the seeds of, oh, so we're all not happy with this one yeah. specific thing or multiple specific things. And then from there, asking the question, okay, well, can we do something about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think yeah. that it's probably scary, especially in a workplace like a strip club
yeah.
where there's not a ton of awareness about things like unions, to just like hurl out right out of the gates like we yeah. should unionize because strikes are horrifying and grueling yeah. and not a thing you want to be the top of mind
yeah.
so just like filming or just creating those relationships with your coworkers and being like, I care about you, you care about me, how right. can we make things better?
Yeah.
And specifically off of that is understanding like where all of your coworkers are coming from, like ask them about their families and like what their situation outside of work is so that you know how much space they have to give. And I think that's something we got lucky about because like being in a strip club, you're already in like this really fun, vulnerable environment. So you talk all the time about like, you know, like what you have going on and everything. So understanding where your coworkers are coming from and what they might need specifically is like a really conscious way to move forward a movement, to know like, okay, like this person is here for this, but just because they're not participating doesn't mean they're not about it. They just like can't participate right now.
Yeah.
So just checking in with everyone when you're having those first complaint conversations and like, what's the biggest issue to you? Mm-hmm. And like dealing with those conversations.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a workplace where like, I think that like if as a white person, like you might have a completely different experience exactly. in a yep. workplace than a worker of color. So just like being able to give over the mic and be like,
yes,
what is your experience, and not like just existing in your own vacuum and being like assuming yeah. that whatever your issues are yeah. like all of the issues.
Yeah. Just taking yourself out of whatever your issues are to hear about the rest of your workers, I think will help you move forward. And also don't listen to your bosses. Like what you were saying before about how they'll lie. They love to lie because they can.
Yeah.
And like, I'm a liar too. I love it. But like, don't listen to your bosses because they'll lie about what's within your rights.
I think, yeah, just like planting the seeds of like potential tactics that management could use
yeah.
if they catch wind that you're organizing. Right. Yeah.
And yep. also you'll be protected. So like if hopefully you will be protected, but retaliation could absolutely happen. But like, don't let that be the fear factor, because if your community is strong the way that ours was, we were there for each other. And we're like, all right, this person's got fired, now we're all going to deliver this petition. So like, once you have that community, understanding that retaliation, if it does happen, it's not the end. Like, that's just the beginning. And you have a lot to work off of from that point.
That's incredible. I mean, the emphasis on community is so important. And yeah. the way that you say it, you don't need to open with, hey, guys, I think we should start a union.
Yeah.
In fact, that's a mistake I think a lot of workplace organizers make, is the first thing, hey, guys, I think we should start a union. Here's what we should do. And the first thing you do is you talk to your coworkers and you say, hey, we're a community. Yeah. I care about you. What are your problems? You care about me. And regardless of your, you know, what organization under labor law you put together, that's what a union is
yeah.
is that mm-hmm. community of workers caring yeah, okay. for each other. You guys already had that.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of workplaces do too, but you can build that in any workplace.
Yeah.
Yes. And then once you've got that community, then you could decide, hey guys, do we want to talk to a labor lawyer or what do we want to do?
Right.
Yeah. But it's that community of workers looking out for each other, that is what makes the difference. Right. And you can build that no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And writing a petition together, even if you never even deliver it, that is something that is so bonding for a community. Mm. Just what are the things that we're not okay with?
Yeah.
And putting it down on paper, I think, is a really like, oof, we did something. That's a bonding moment. So I think that's also a really good, like, once the conversation has been brought up, just get to the petition because that'll help.
Yeah.
It helped us.
I think, like, one misconception about, like, our group, too, is that we, like, want to be like conquistadors for the union and like unionize every single strip club in the country. And I do think it's worth noting that like a union is a very personal thing that the workers at this one specific workplace can or may not choose to join. Yeah. So it's definitely on a personal basis of what you think your workplace needs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool that we made this as an option, but we are not, there's no intention for us to like turn every club into a union club. It's more of like, if that is something that you are looking for, let's make it available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we want to help. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, I've said enough about how inspired I am by what you guys are doing. If people want to follow you, where can they find you? How can people support your work?
Sure. Our Instagram is at Equity Strippers NoHo.
That's also our website. We have a donor box that we're using as our solidarity fund right now. So you can definitely donate there if you'd like to. And also, if you're in LA, come to the club. It is $40 and a one drink minimum. But it helps us to have people in there complaining to management. And also, we love to hang out, so come through.
And hopefully it won't be $40 for
forever. Yeah.
They might see the light. We'll see.
I hope for that for you. Best of luck in your contract negotiation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show to talk to me about it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you once again to Lilith and Charlie for coming on the show. If you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, I hope you'll consider supporting us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/AdamConover. $5 a month gets you every episode ad-free. $15 a month gets me reading your name on this very show. Most recently, I want to thank Chris Rezac, Nara Niles, Quotidiophile, Ryan Cowler, John McAfee, Scott Kaler, and Algie Williams. Thank you to all of you and everybody who supports this show. If you want to support me as a stand-up comedian, head to AdamConover.com. For my tour dates and tickets. I want to thank my producers, Sam Roudman and Tony Wilson, everybody here at HeadGum for helping make this show possible. Thank you so much. If you want to find me online, you can do so at AdamConover.net or at Adam Conover wherever you get your social media. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next week on Factually.
That was a HeadGum podcast.